fairly eventful EHT campaign. And Marecki's actually contributing to the ALMA phasing project. His group is providing the fiber optic link between the high site phased array and the mid-level site recorders. So Marecki's talking about super resolution imaging with sparse modeling.
Yeah. Do you hear me?
Right. It's working.
Maybe a bit high. Yeah. Oh, good morning. I'm Marecki, and I'm talking about sort of a new technique, doing getting better image. But before starting my talk, well, actually this is kind of outline of my talk. So before getting into details of super resolution imaging, I would like to give a very brief summary of what we have been doing in the EHT project. I mean, I'm a sort of representative of Japanese EHT-related activity, so let me give a few minutes to talk about that. And then later I will actually move on to the super resolution imaging, which is Oh, yes. Thank you. This is, actually, of course, we are very much interested in doing science of EHT. I'm related to black holes. So actually, let me give some example of what we are doing, EHT-related science. And of course, we on Tuesday, we got a talk by Kazuo Akiyama, so maybe I can do it very quickly. But anyway, Kazuo already told you, we have been involved in EHT data analysis, 1.3 millimeter VLBI, and actually this is one of the most impressive results what we got. So actually, we got the closure phase from M87 data, as Kazuo already mentioned. And of course, at this moment, just one triangle is not really enough to resolve the image. So it's still consistent with quite a lot of different images. But later, say maybe next year or next few years, when we get ALMA, then of course, certainly we can say something about the image. That's really interesting finding. And also we are working on millimeter VLBI and also centimeter VLBI stuffs. For example, Hadasan is now having very good data of M87 at 86 GHz. So this is an image of M87 taken with high sensitivity array, VLBI plus GBT at 86 GHz. It's really beautiful and showing a very clear limb brightening structure extending toward the core. And you see the scale here is showing tangible shoot radii. So we are really close to touching the black hole itself. And Hadasan is also trying to get some information about planimetry. That's wonderful. And we are also doing centimeter and long millimeter wave monitoring of this object, M87, Sagittarius A star, and some other lasers using our own network in Japan, and also collaboration with KVN, Korean-Japan collaboration. So here's one example taken with Vera, that's our array in Japan. Actually in 2012, we had a flare in TEB gamma, that's kind of very high energy stuff. And so here's a light curve of TEB in 2012 spring, and this is 7 millimeter VLBI flux, and 1 centimeter VLBI flux with Vera. So clearly you see a rise in the radio flux. So it's kind of, a radio flare in accordance with the TEB gamma flare. So this is something, which is telling you, mechanism about TEB gamma emission. And so they are not all of the science we are doing, but just a picks up of some of them. And then I would like to move on to the technical part. As Jonathan introduced, we are participating in APP project, ALMA phaser project. And actually our contribution is to build optical fiber link system, which is kind of link between ALMA high site, which is 5,000 meter, and we have another site called OSF, which is kind of base camp, 3,000 meters, and which these two sites are separated by 30 kilometers, and we just would like to send data through one fiber. Actually, this is the picture of what we are doing. So actually, we visited Chile site, Alma site, last June. Here's the team. It's me and Kazu Akiyama and another student, Kazu. And here's a picture of box. That's an optical fiber link box we installed at the high site. And here's Kazu. Kazu really looks happy with the oxygen tube in his mouth. Well, actually, so this is a kind of proof that, you know, he can really walk at high place, like 5,000 meters. So if you need someone, you know, some slave, you're looking for some slave, and maybe you can take him and make him walk at high place. And this is another box here at computation room at OSF. So actually, we have two boxes and linking the data between ALMA and OSF. And as Michael gave a talk about this yesterday, we already got the link, and the error rate is quite low, like 10 to minus 5 or minus 6. So I think these systems are ready to go. And then this is the main part of my talk. So actually, now we have been developing new imaging technique to you know, boost the imaging capability of UHD. That's the super resolution. So I would like to say something about motivation. Well, probably it's very clear, and I don't really have to explain. But anyway, we are doing UHD, and what we really like to get to do is to get the highest angular resolution to a very precise image of black hole. That's right. And then, of course, if we want to talk about angular resolution, of course, you should go to this very famous equation, you know, talking about the diffraction limit. Basically, resolution is limited by two factors. One is wavelength, lambda, and the other is the size of telescope. I mean, in the case of interferometer, of course, it's the size of the maximum baseline, of course. And so we are doing millimeter VLBI, and so we are trying to, you know, do improve both. I mean, we are going to higher frequency, that means shorter wavelength, and we are also, you know, trying to do international to make the array as large as possible. That's what we are really doing here. But if you can do more, you know, something beyond this equation, that would be very fantastic. I mean, if there is another way to improve the resolution of the array, that should be very, very good. I mean, it's a, so if super resolution is possible, it's like, you know, something equivalent to building larger, like even larger than the diameter of the Earth. But say, you know, super resolution sounds like a kind of magic. You know, some people would feel a little bit uncomfortable about that, and some people would even think that you know, I myself is kind of mad scientist or something like that. But anyway, let me try to. Explain. Let me try to convince you that the super resolution is really possible, doable. So actually, this is a very basic interferometric imaging. Probably everybody here knows about that. So actually, the basic relation between the image and the visibility, the observable, is just two-dimensional periodic information. Everybody knows that. So actually, we sample visibility along the UV. This is a miserable UV coverage of Vera. It's only four stations away. And then here, so you have some sampling point of visibilities. But the problem we always have is, you know, visibility is sampled only very limited part. And for other parts, there is a quite lot of information missed. You know, if you take a grid of the visibility plane, then of course most of, you know, these points, there's no information, no observable. So the only thing you can do, you know, in usual standard imaging, what you usually do is just put zero value. Of battery running out? Oh yes, still, yeah. So you simply put zero here to the unsampled grid, and then make Fourier transform. And then you get, you know, image like this. This is just a dirty beam. So you have a, you know, finite size of synthesized beam. And also you see many, many sideloads. Well, I can relate this equation in a system of linear equations or in a matrix form. So this is exactly what we are doing in standard imaging. So here is the image. This is unknown we would like to obtain. And here is the observations, I mean, visibility sampled along some baseline. And here's a matrix, which is just a Fourier transform matrix. And then the important thing is, as I mentioned, the number of observables are usually always smaller than the number of solutions. And then we have to fill some portion of the visibility plane with zero values. And actually, this is this zero filling process is really producing the finite beam size and side lobes. So if you would like to do, you know, super resolution imaging, then the direct way to do this is just avoid zero filling. So this is something we would like to solve. So here is, again, image, that's the solution, and this is observable. So now it's very clear that we have a smaller number of observations than compared to the number of solution components. And basically, you cannot find a unique solution for such kind of system. That we have learned at the junior high school. And but in other words, still we can solve this kind of equation. Well, at least we can say that there are many, many solutions to this equation. Well, actually, there are infinite number of solutions. So the only thing we have to do is just select one most reasonable solution among the infinite number of solutions. That's something, some sort of technique which can avoid zero filling effect. And then we can be free from side lobes and resolution. Of course, it's just in theory. But I'm later that it should work. So here are possible suggestions, possible ways to do such kind of selection of the best image. So actually, on Monday, there was talk by John Monial, and he talks about imaging with maximum entropy method. So that's one way, using information. They introduce some sort of information entropy, and then they pick up the best image, which maximizes the information entropy. But actually, here we are trying to do different approach. We would like to select the best solution based on sparsity of the solution. So here's so what we are trying to do is just pick up the image with most zero components, the image with largest number of zero components, the kind of simplest image. And if you want to do something like that, then we can quite easily realize that kind of selection based on L1 norm. Well, I don't get into details about that. But anyway, probably you have heard something about compressive sensing, which is kind of in boom in imaging science, in computational science. So this is quite a related technique. In this case, we are trying to use Lasso. This is expressed like this. But anyway, there is a regularization based on L1. It's just a sum of absolute value of each component. But anyway, it's kind of similar technique to compressive sensing. And the question is, the assumption of sparsity. I just try to pick up the most sparse image. But the question is whether this is really reasonable or not. Well, for VOVI case, I can safely say that this assumption is quite reasonable because, we are interested in black hole imaging. Black hole image should be very much focused, concentrated in the vicinity of a black hole because, we're just picking up the high brightness temperature stuff. And VOVI is interferometer, and you usually have a very sparse UV coverage. Sometimes, short baselines are quite missing. And then it works as a filter to cut out the extended component of the image. So when you're talking about the VLB imaging of black holes, you can safely assume the sparsity. So here's the result of some simulation. This is a very simple result. But so actually, I assume a six-station EHT array, including ALMA. So this. And I assume target were M87, which is one of our main targets. And here's the visibility and UV coverage of the array. And so this is a model input image. It's a kind of toy model, ring-like black hole shadow, or maybe crescent-type black hole shadow. And I used a smaller mass of 3 × 10⁹ solar mass. And if you do standard imaging based on, you know, zero filling to the unsampled visibility and, like, you know, kind of clean stuff, and then of course you have a finite size of sensitized beam, which smeared out all the structure, fine structure within a beam, and so you cannot tell whether this is ring-like black hole or whether this is like a crescent-type black hole or not. But here is that reconstruction based on sparse model, as I mentioned, as I explained. And we can, you know, clearly reproduce finer structure, even finer than the standard beam size. So that, you know, looks like a little promising. How fine? Yeah. So actually what we are really doing now is to apply this kind of technique to real data and to check if we can really do, you know, kind of super resolution stuff. So actually there is a poster by Fumie Tazaki. Probably some of you already contacted her. She presented a very interesting, impressive result. So this is the case for M87 again. Of course, this is not EHT, but VLDA observation at 22 and 43 GHz. So actually this is thanks to Hada-san. So Hada-san, this is Hada et al. 2011 Nature paper. That's a 43 GHz image of VLDA. And I apply the same technique to the same data, I mean the same source, same data, but with different technique. And here what we got. This is 43 GHz super resolution image of M87. And if you compare these two images coming from the same data, you know, the difference is very clear. And you see, you know, limb brightening structure are separated even close to the core. And what is really maybe the most surprising stuff here is that you see something even beyond the core, which is most likely a counterjet. And here's another version. I also applied this technique to 24 years data of this M87 data set. Well, actually, this is a multi-frequency observation, including six frequencies at one epoch. So actually, at 24 GHz, we still see limb brightening structure and also see the counterjet. So I really think that this is a real structure. So this is just to check whether we really reproduce the visibility. So this is amplitude, blue is the data, and green is the model. So both amplitude and phase are well reproduced. And the other thing we have to do is just to check whether such kind of, for example, counterjet structure are produced artificially or they are real structure or not. So this is sort of simulation we created through the image based on our result. So here we have the image just looks like what we got in the last picture of image M87 here. We have some sort of counterjet structure. But we also prepared another image by, you know, manually deleting this counterjet structure. And so it looks like this. And what we really did is to make a Fourier conversion, you know, Fourier transform to visibility plane, and then pick up the visibility data along the UV coverage of VLBA, and then add some noise, realistic noise to the data, and then make another image reconstruction based on a technique. And so this is the initial input, and this is the result. And in the case of existence of counterjet structure, we do see the counterjet structure. And if there is no counterjet-like structure, and we do not see the counterjet-like structure. So this is kind of proof that such kind of counterjet-like structure is not artificial, but rather more or less originated to the data visibility itself. So here are the concluding remarks for summarizing my talk. So I think this kind of technique, postmodern technique, really allows us to get higher angular resolution, and so, which is going to boost the imaging capability of EHT very much. And at least by looking at the real data application, it looks, quite promising. So of course we still have quite a lot of issues to be solved. For example, we have to, well, this is a very big question. So we have to evaluate to which extent our image is very reliable. This is a very big question. And of course, the other thing is we have to, make it applicable to nonlinear regime like bispectrum or closure phase or something like that. But anyway, this is just, I would like to show the last slide to give a very good impression of how wonderful, getting fine images is. So this is a picture of comet, which is just kind of one of them. That's a normal, just kind of boring picture of a comet. But actually, this is really exciting, the most hot topic in recent science due to the Rosetta. It's really surprising. So, by comparing these two different pictures of the same source with different resolution, everybody is sure that high, getting a high resolution image really brings a revolution and breakthrough in science. So I have another source which also more or less looks like comet, which is M87. So let's see what happens within a couple of next years. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mareki. Time for questions. Let's start with Dimitrios.
I really enjoyed your talk, and I really, really enjoyed reading your papers. And I want to say that you made a very important assertion that leads us back to the discussion that we had yesterday. Your assertion was that the sparsity of the image is a good norm, which implies that if you were to reproduce that analysis with an infinite number of situations, with infinite number of different baselines placed in different parts of the Earth, as the number of, or as the UV coverage goes to infinity, then the norm goes to the minimum norm, which is the image that you reproduce, that you put in, right? Mm-hmm. That your actual image has the minimum norm. This is something that will require to prove, even numerically, an incredible number of simulations. Mm-hmm. And I would be really, really interested to know if this is the best norm to have for the for the EHT.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe we have to try, many possible images.
Exactly.
Whether, you have to check whether this kind of scheme really works for that.
Exactly, because in the maximum entropy, there's some information theoretic ideas why the entropy always increases away from where you start. Mm. For the sparsity, there's no a priori reason why that is the case. And it's a great assertion, but that's something that we really need to explore.
Yeah. So that would give a very good collaboration point.
You did not.
All right, so Thomas next.
Hi, Mareki. In the various synthesis imaging workshops over the many years, people always said it is very dangerous to do super resolution. So the question which I have is, it all depends, of course, on dynamic range of the data. To what extent do you do the super resolution? I mean, how large is it compared to the original beam?
Yeah. That's really very important question, and as I already mentioned, at this moment, I have no answer. But probably the important thing is, of course, we have to have a very high SNR ratio. Otherwise, we should never apply this kind of technique to bad data. So I at this moment don't have any concrete answer. But possible way is, first anyway, apply this kind of technique to get super resolution image, and then as I just showed, We can check whether this is reliable or not based on making a simulation using a 3D image. That's one thing I can do. If the convergence is not really good, then if you use as the resultant image as the input of that kind of simulation, probably you will get different answers. So in that way, probably we can check the reliability of it.
Well, in the imaging, which usually is used by many people, and nowadays actually is also used by the radio astron people, mm-hmm. they use this so-called robustness parameter. And in Radio Astron, they have a similar problem that they have one long baseline, yeah, which is, yeah, having not enough signal to noise ratio. But so they apply what they call the super uniform weighting, which is roughly equivalent to the robustness of 5. So one thing you could try is actually you apply this method and compare it with your method and see to what extent the two results agree.
Yeah, yeah, right, right. That's a very good point. Yeah.
So yeah, I have a couple of comments. The first comment is related to what Thomas was saying. There have been theoretical works dealing with the super resolution issue or super resolution problem of interferometric observations. And it can be proven, indeed, that the super resolution power of an interferometer is roughly the size of the beam divided by the square root of the signal-to-noise ratio of your detection. So that if your dynamic range is 100, you can, in principle, go down to 1/10 of the beam for a 3 sigma detection of a size. That's incredible. So there's a lot of potential in this business of super resolution. But the other side of the coin is that you should never forget that what you get in the end is a model of the data. So if you further analyze the image that you have obtained, or you fit something to the image, you are fitting models to a model. Okay, you are not fitting models to the data anymore. The image is a representation of the data. So that using the same strategy of sparsity, okay, and taking the advantage of sparsity directly into the Fourier plane might be the optimum way to go. In the sense that if you, instead of fitting models to the image, you fit directly a model to the visibilities, then the sparsity is in the size of your parameter space in the fit. Okay, so I mean that the optimum way to go, if you want to super resolve your data, is to fit models directly to the visibilities, trying to bypass the imaging. So that the sparsity goes in, the sparsity of your fit is just the space, the space of your parameter, of the your parameter space in the fit.
Well.
Do you want to respond? Is that more of a question or a comment?
Well, there are a couple of comments.
I don't think my technique is. Well, I don't think this technique is. It's not real modeling, but it's more or less like imaging. But it's in kind, you know. I understand your point, and it's sometimes it's not easy to distinguish whether we are really making a model or we are making images. So, well, maybe that's something we have to discuss. Yeah,
there seem to be a lot of questions about this. I'm going to allow Shepard one short question, and then we'll break for coffee.
No, I was just going to suggest that a different application for this would be those movies by Craig Walker, mm-hmm, right, where he has a number of different movies with coherent structures that seem to flow out from the black hole. It'd be very interesting to see if you could tie together in time some of those sequential images by using this technique to see if it also makes sense as you evolve the source and time. Mm-hmm. Right, because that's one more thing to tie those together to see if you're getting, see if you're locking on to the right features.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Plus, it would be a very cool movie to make. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so let's close on that. We'll thank Marecki again.